Sorry that I'm late, but I need to record because I was just sitting on my couch and Liz came home and she was like, "Don't you have the podcast?" I'm like, "Yeah, at 8:30." She's like, "Did you guys change the time?" I'm like, "No, it's always 8:30." She's like, "No, it's not." And I'm like, "Yeah, yeah, wait, is it not?" And then I look at my phone and you guys are like, I'm like, "Oh shit, do we always start at 8? She's like, "I don't know. It's your podcast." I'm like, "Have we always started at 8? She's like, "I think so." I'm like,
"Yes, we do." Huh. Well, no. I think you're remembering that we typically start at 8:30 because you're finishing an arena game for half an hour.
Yeah.
I put away my brainstorms, can't trip it all, but I was drawing cards on a dungeon crawl. Saw my deck list on a website, didn't recognize the names. But a turn 1-3 drop carries the game on the streets of Philadelphia. I played an ancient tune for Chalice someone. Kevin on cleric, and now you're done. So many blue decks here to farm. Manaya, anointed peacekeeper, skull and tongue on the streets of Philadelphia. Designed this mechanic for four players, but it's just you and I, my friend. But hey, if power creep can kill true names someday, the initiative will end.
Hello and welcome to the Canadian Threshold, the legacy podcast that's more infected than any of Quinn's opponents at Eternal Weekend. Oh yeah, that's a cough right on cue. But we'll introduce him later as is custom. I'm here as always with my co-host Jeff Kinsey. Jeff, how are you doing?
Hello, I'm doing good. Nice and strong immune system, feeling juiced.
My immune system is shit, is what I've learned, you know, the first two times I got COVID, but I dodged this one. It was my immune system was like, oh, we've seen this guy twice. Oh, we've seen a synthetic guy too, another two times. And it finally, I believe that I'm safe. The virgin body, though, the pristine temple was fucking invaded. We're here with our COVID pod. Well, maybe not anymore. COVID positive co-host Brent McBain. McBain, how's it going?
Pristine temple, really? Wow. Okay.
Well, you were untouched, right?
By that's what you take, not the virgin body.
you are correct in that I had, as far as I know, this was the first time I had gotten COVID. Yeah.
Brought home an extra souvenir from Philadelphia.
I did. I had gotten my like bivariant booster shot and flu shot like a month before. So I was only sick like for maybe a day and a bit. In terms of like actually feeling like fairly unwell and having a fever. And it kind of just was like a malaise for another day or so. But after that, I was fine. Lissa was down for like 4 days, though.
Oof. Enough to put the fear of God in everyone who's on that trip, though.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the crazy thing is like, outside of, I mean, you getting it, it's like, every time I flew anywhere, I was like, oh
my God, everyone's coughing on the plane.
Yeah, and like not like a little, you know, like, ooh, excuse me, I have like a thing in my throat, like yeah, full dry throated air. Like, yeah.
It's also like, look, there's no law you have to wear a mask or any shit like that. I mean, I would recommend it, but hey, I'm not a doctor. But like, you're coughing Like, okay, maybe you got to get on the plane to get home, but just like put a fucking mask on. Like the one time, come on.
Where's like, you know, your level of cultural shame at least, right? Like,
yeah.
If I'm going down, you're all coming with me.
Yeah, if you're actually coughing, at least then please put a fucking mask on.
On the way home from New York. Clean
things up. Or, okay, never mind.
I won the mask lottery. I had like an elderly Chinese couple on my left, fully like had the full N95s. Guy over here, N95, had those HEPA filters going, but I could just hear it like through the cabin, the rest of the cabin. I'm like, I'm not moving from this spot.
Your bubble.
Well, now that we've done the health check, should we clean some house?
Yeah, HEPA filter the house. We have some local news. The Connections, I think this is the first time we've announced this time. The Connection is starting up their monthly again, which is known as January 9th. McBain forced them to change it to, from a holiday everybody wasn't working on.
I didn't force anything. I asked.
Hey, could you make this a less convenient date? Thanks.
I just asked when it was happening, and there was 5 Mondays.
Okay, so January 9th, and then the first Monday of each month at 6:30 p.m. at the Connection. Noted also a 20 proxy limit, which is great. Hopefully able to pull out some people that, you know, either want to try something else out or don't have a list to come out and play in the first place.
Can't wait to play against so many white pool adventurers now that no one has to track them down.
I think the City of Traders are the bottleneck on that one.
Well, I mean, at least you can buy City of Traders if you want to. It's pretty hard to find white plumes right now. They're not expensive. It's like finding Warhammer cards. They're not expensive, most of them. You're just like, good luck finding them.
I will trade one-to-one if anybody really needs white plume adventurers. I have some extras. I am accepting City of Traders in return.
I was going to say one-to-one for what? Is this like... This sounds like a stone for sheep kind of trade that is just a bad trade.
And then on the bigger event front, we have this events from Laughing Dragon starting up, the Magic Experience. Is that who is capitalized on the actual thing?
Yeah, well, I think it's and the abbreviation is MXP, I believe.
Okay. MXP, that's MXP is okay. Magic Experience, E. Capital X, capital P, Eriance. I don't know if I'm down with. But Laughing Dragon starting up a quarterly series. I think we managed to talk about this before, or did we not break our NDA?
No, we kept the NDA sealed.
So it's kind of the response to Grand Prix not existing in like Star City events on the West Coast. So like, Star City events on the East Coast, they're trying to do over here. So Oakland in April is a Legacy 5K. Tacoma in August, which they haven't announced anything it's for, right? I think some of these are going to be Modern, some were EDH, you know, big main event and then stuff on the side. It's kind of like a Sunday Super Series or whatever at a GP. And then Portland sometime after. Yeah, I think like after.
The Oakland Mains Pioneer or something.
Okay. And just a big Legacy side event.
Yeah. And I think they're predominantly like, the headliners are Modern and Pioneer.
Mm-hmm. The money makers.
The crowd drawers.
Crowd pleasers.
There you go.
Yeah, and we're over there on the side event tables grinding.
Having fun.
Yeah, but it's very cool. And I mean, we got to talk to the guys at Laughing Dragon. We were down for that 1K, and they're very excited to be putting these together, as well as catering to, you know, the Pacific Northwest or West Coast legacy scene. So it's good to have that energy kind of, you know, revitalizing or boosting the scene.
Yeah. And I don't think they've released details on the, well, it used to be called the Legacy Preservation Series. And it was kind of like it's like this feeder event through the weekly tournaments that you collect points as you play throughout the year. And then you get an invite to a special, like, you know, high stakes event. And they, when we were down at the 1K, they also announced that they were going to be starting that up again under a different name and like a similar structure. It doesn't have any like direct ramifications for Vancouver specifically. And I don't think the 1Ks that they're running or like the quarterly events that they'll run feed into it. But it's also cool to see that kind of starting up again, which is sweet.
There were some kind of real backroom, real unverified whispers of trying to link something up with Stronghold, right?
Yeah.
Which would be super cool to have any kind of entry point into an event like that, something to link, you know, the communities together.
Yeah, the one thing of note, Laughing Dragon and Magic Stronghold in Vancouver are like, I guess, like business partners. So in one of their tweets that they had for announcing the MXP series, they also said Magic Stronghold, Card Kingdom, Tales of Adventure Magic, and Great Land Games are kind of part of that process as well.
TOA, really? Crazy. Yeah.
So I would expect their stores to be part of that chain or that tournament series as well. So I think that's all we should say on it right now. Like, it's still fairly early days, and I guess we'll make another episode or two of this show so we can talk about it then.
One thing, early heads up, the Oakland event takes place at the Oakland Convention Center, which is only a 7 to 10 minute Uber / Lyft / cab ride to Horn Barbecue. just planning it out already.
I love how you're like, this will be a, I guess this will be a good transition to our next topic, Quinn, but I really do appreciate your like food metagame in relation to like the Magic event.
Yeah,
it's really unparalleled.
Even Delaware players have to eat.
Yeah, it is true. Some eat better than others, right?
Everybody's working on their sideboard map, and Quinn's working on the map to the best breweries.
Speaking of breweries, oh, they're like down the street from this really great brewery too. The convention center is, rather. Well, I'm more intrigued by Oakland in April now. Also, it'll be like, Oakland in April's gorgeous too. Like, it's going to be like 20 degrees. It'd be sweet.
All right, I'm interested.
So, Quinn, you were really excited for Philadelphia. And honestly, I think you were like, if it was in Pittsburgh again, you probably wouldn't have gone, correct?
Yeah, I would have thought about it. Pittsburgh was nice.
What was your overall impression with like Philly? Like, before we get into like maybe the Magic side of things, like, do we want to just say a few minutes about our thoughts on Philly, leaving COVID aside?
I thought Philly rules. I would love to go back there. Just, I mean, if Eternal Weekend's back there, great. But I would go back there to not play Magic and, you know, go to some museums and actually like, I heard there's a large bell that's quite historically important, and there's some kind of declaration that Nick Cage is looking for. Wait, it's Nick Cage, right?
Yeah, no. National Treasure?
Yeah. So, like, we didn't get to check out any of that stuff, but, like, what we did check out, I love that it's just kind of, like, neighborhoods, sort of, like, remind me of, in that way, of Portland, you know? Like, you hit a neighborhood, and then there's, like, stuff, you know? And you, like, go to a different neighborhood, and there's stuff. Lots of great restaurants.
General city layout.
well, like, you know, like, you go to some cities and you're like, oh, there's like a downtown, and then there's like, you know, the kind of neighborhoods blur together. This, I felt like we, like, you know, you go up to like Fishtown and there's stuff. You go down to like close to the Italian Market and there's stuff, kind of thing, you know.
That's true. Sure.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe a Philly local will set me straight, but yeah,
great. Or maybe they're just like, that's all of it. You saw it all.
There's two places. Yeah.
Yeah. That's it.
Great food, great beer, easy to get around. Yeah.
You take the train the right direction.
Yeah. I mean, that was a minor inconvenience, even that.
I did really like the downtown. I liked that how the convention center was like right in downtown.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Almost to the point where it had just been like dropped like a spaceship from the sky, like, and just landed in the middle of this like very historic city. And I loved like the really narrow kind of one-way street setup that they had, which again is just like a more of an old timey kind of 19th century thing, but it was super cool. I enjoyed it. I loved like even the position where we had our hotel and we had to kind of do this 10-minute walk. It was like a cool 10-minute walk every time. So
yeah, it's a very walkable city. Like obviously there's like, you know, it's a pretty big city, so it's like traffic, but it wasn't like you weren't like crossing like roads where you're like, I might die. And also I could only get to the median and then have to wait again. You know, it's like made for people to live in.
Yeah. And it, when I think of like the big Vegas events that we've gone to, where it feels like you're a little ant in this giant city and you're like, oh, the event's right over there. But it's literally a 25-minute walk across this like parking lot to get to it.
But there's gambling though.
I don't care.
Like, I don't need walkability if I can like stay up till 4 a.m. playing cards.
Okay. Yeah, it was great. Reading market? Is that what it's
reading,
called?
Reading terminal or reading writing terminal? I don't
right beside it, the convention center. I had that was heard cool as about hell. That place. But Jeff, when we went in and we got that sandwich and we split it, like the what the hell were they?
Rubens.
The Rubens? Yeah.
Pastrami Ruben and a brisket Ruben.
That was unreal. That was a next level play. That was really cool. And just having that right beside the convention center, there was definitely one of my rounds where I just got smoked. And I was like, oh, sweet. I have 40 minutes of extra time. I'm going to go down to the market.
I can get real food. Yeah, that was like, it was weird. There was no food in the convention center at all. But that said, like, yeah, unless I was just like running hot and going to time every round, like I would sooner leave and go eat it like at the market or something anyways.
There's even like a Trader Joe's right beside that you can just sip over to too.
17 cent water.
Yeah, money. So yeah, Philly was sweet. I would definitely go back there again. And yeah, 5 out of 5 Yelp review.
Yeah, Philly was great. And like, you know, Elliot and I stayed in a place a bit down the street from you guys. But like you said, like getting up every morning and like walking down Broad Street and just like walking straight towards City Hall, which is just kind of right at the end of the street. Like the visuals are awesome. And then, you know, so many places to go after the event or before and get like coffee, pastries, whatever. Like very, very cool. Like I like Pittsburgh a lot and I'd be happy to go back to Pittsburgh. But like Philly was super sweet. And being that I showed up a little late too, there's a lot more of it I think that you guys saw too that I want to end up seeing.
Also very close to many other cities on the Eastern Seaboard. So if you happen to be going for Eternal Weekend, you have the option, you know, before or after to do a lot of other stuff too, which is like nice from like a kind of adult travel perspective.
It's true. Yeah. Like every opponent I talk to, I ask them where they're from. And like, oh, you're driving? Like, yeah, it's like 5 hours. Like that's like from all different places. Everybody's like, yeah, it's like 5 hours away. It's fine.
Yeah. I had like 4 New York opponents in a row at one point. The amount of people from New York was pretty crazy. But I assume that's also New York State because they didn't really specify, which is also a pretty big place. So
New York City. Yeah. New York State. Boo. You just say New York and just leave it at that.
Exactly. And hope they don't ask further. So magic wise, Jeff, like maybe just paint us a picture for you. You had left like a week earlier to go for work.
So I left 3 weeks earlier to go for work.
Right.
So this was an interesting thing being that I knew I was going to this event and I didn't want to pack, you know, every magic card I own. So there was a lot of scrambling, you know, 3 weeks before Eternal Weekend for like, I knew I was going to play Initiative and the list wasn't homogenized. There was a lot of different things people are trying and, you know, different ideas boiling around. Right before I left, like a day before I left, I borrowed Colin's Mox Diamonds because we thought, you know, Mox Diamonds, like once upon a time is the truth. those didn't come out of my binder. Colin messaged me and he's like, did you just fly my Mox Diamonds on a little tour of the United States and never take them out of the binders? Yeah, sorry, man. They got some miles on them, but they're safe. It's not fun trying to think of everything you need before you go, because all of a sudden I needed, you know, my third and fourth Cavern of Souls that I didn't bring for some reason. I needed some Aven Mayan sensors they didn't have on me. I needed some stupid shit like Fairy Macabre. Just all this random stuff that like I both didn't pack for some reason, and it's not distinct enough to be somewhere in my room that I can ask Gravine to find it easily. I got her to steal some of my plateaus because Rob might have needed them, and that was like, okay, those are on this shelf in this binder, get them. But like, oh, there's a palace jailer and one of these 18 stacks I need you to please find. It's 25 cents and I don't want to buy a fifth one. It's a little too much.
I think at that point, like the making your wife do this task and 25 cents is like, it's not even in the same realm. Go pick through my bulk, please.
Yeah. So I ended up buying
question,
stuff
and question why you married
from
me.
TOA. And they had a pickup thing at Eternal Weekends. If you bought it before a certain day, you could show up to their booth and pick it up. So it was like 30 minutes before the first round starts. I like scramble over there. I'm like, I need my stuff, please. I got the rest of my sideboard. So, I mean, that was a whole journey up. But I'd also hoped on practicing the deck a bit more in person and online, and I didn't get much of a shot to. In person, I was planning on trying to go to a face-to-face event when I was around Toronto, but face-to-face is so fucking far away from anything else in Toronto. Like, look, I was staying in Mississauga, which that's far away as it is, but I was like, one of these days they do Legacy on Friday. I'm like, it's perfect. I'm going to, you know, maybe knock off work a little early, cruise down to Toronto, grab Rob. We'll go to face-to-face and hit up an event. But like, it's fucking, you get to Toronto and it's like 30 minutes on the other side of Toronto.
Like, can you just take the subway, like the Bloor subway or whatever?
Oh, like a fucking chump.
It takes like 20 minutes.
I mean, probably. I don't know. I just looked and it was far away and figured that's tough. And then Rob's family was sick anyway, so it would have been just me. Shout out to XJ Cloud for lending me some of the initial stuff online when it was still like $600 for a playset of both of the cards. I did get to play a few leagues, which was good. But then I just flew in, you know, deck hotly re-sleeved, some cards put in morning of, and was ready to jam an event.
I just want to point out that it's 15 minutes to face-to-face from Bloor and Bay.
You think I know where Bloor and Bay is?
Like, that's like right downtown, basically.
You think I had looked at a subway map? I was in Mississauga. Does it even go that far?
It's so far.
It is. I'd have to drive to the fucking park and ride or something.
Also, I like how you're like, oh man, I'll like pick up Rob, but it's so far away to face face. He lives like right by it.
I appreciate the fact check, Quinn. That was good. I don't believe this.
I don't know Toronto geography. I looked at Google Maps and thought, fuck.
You know, you can put directions and it tells you how long it takes, right? Like, you don't just use your eyes and go, oh, that's like two thumbs.
The truth is, Green and I were in Toronto one night and we were just like down somewhere. And I was like, I wonder where face to face is. And I punched it in. I was like, that's far. And then that's just where it settled in my mind.
This is such a classic Jeff. So you were playing, was there any like exceptions that you had to make then? Because you had to kind of plan your moon landing 3 weeks before, or were you playing the 75 you wanted?
Thanks to the crew of everybody involved, some of you on this podcast, some of you not, I got the cards I needed together. The only thing I was really missing out of maybe a pure 75 was a fourth or third City of Traders. I was only playing two because I can only get two.
Oh, I could play a city. Sorry. I have cities. I used two.
Yeah. But it's all good. I think honestly, two, it let me make room for a second Caracas, which was good. And look, city's good and acceleration's good in the deck, but it's not all there is. So yeah.
I mean, it's mostly what there is, right? Is it the whole point you turn one something?
No, it's all good.
How did your event go overall, Jeff?
Sure. Very good. You know, well, I'll give it a pretty good. You know, coming in to any event after not playing any big Magic events, like the last thing I played was the 1K Laughing Dragon. And I think I've hit maybe like 3 weeklies since then. And just playing a bit online, like you're always kind of rusty, and being in a convention hall for the first time in a long time, like a big one, like that's a weird feeling too.
Did you get the, like, you know, slightly raised heartbeat?
Oh yeah,
in the first round or anything?
Near like dexterity errors, you know, you're like, oh, chalice, turn one.
I hate myself. Oh. Yeah.
But I think I kept it together, and thankfully I kept my mind pretty sharp. You know, I think when I was talking with the 1K last time, you know, I'm missing chalice triggers, and you know, you're like, what does this thing do? What does that do? Like, I had enough reps with just the bullshit that is the Undercity that, like, I was on top of those triggers, which I think translated to a few heads up situations, which was cool. But like, also something that just happens in a lot of bigger events, you know, you play the first couple of rounds and you're like, dude, I have not seen these decks in like a while. I mean, the first 3 rounds I played were like, I've been listening to Psycho Elves, but like, you know, Newton Elves or Orcs or Nightmare on Elf Street, whatever the hell you want to call it, the Fiend Artisan deck with like 11 mm-hmm. elves in it. Then I played against Mud, shout out Jim Monolith, like actual factual metal worker Mud. And I think also Quinn, from like knowing you and talking to you like forever and just respecting the metal boy, it's like that thing comes out, that thing fucking dies. That thing does not get to live. Oh, like, yeah. I don't care what I'm throwing away. And every time I like kill it, and then Jim would be like, you were dead.
Yeah. You, like, you let your opponent attack with metalwork, and all of a sudden there's like a fucking like Ugin or something.
Yep.
Ugin's pretty like,
quaint.
Worse than Ugin, yeah.
Yeah, played against Pox, like, it's just some weird stuff. I managed to dodge the like mirror bracket for most of the day, but like, it was surreal. You sit down and you look to the left and you look to the right, and like, somebody in one of those matches, in both of those matches, somebody is making the Undercity. Like, it's crazy. And then as you go through the tournament, you see the evolutions of the deck. The first round I sit down, my opponent next to me, I hear them just go Cavern on Rogue, and I'm like, oh, holy shit. And I look, and they're like, Arakoa Sneak. I take the initiative. Now, do either of you know what Arakoa Sneak is?
Is that the black one?
Nope.
No idea.
No, that I don't
it's
know.
Banned
oh.
in Popper.
It's the blue one.
It's the 4-mana 1/4 flyer.
Yeah.
Oh, the bird guy. Yeah.
Yep. And like, man, and you get different levels. And you're like, oh, people are playing Stoneforge. People are playing, you know, Urza Saga. People are playing Ephemerate. It was kind of sick for a deck that I don't know what percent of the meta it was, but like, clearly it was fucking everywhere, to be so unrefined. You know, all of them were like, yeah, fast mana initiative guys, and then whatever. So you'd play the mirror and you'd be like, I have no idea what the fuck they're on. People are playing goddamn empty shrine Kanushi for some reason.
I honestly think that added to the strength of the deck against mm-hmm. the other field, like the other decks in the field. And that, like, even if you, like, not a lot of people had reps against it.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you did, it's like, oh, well, I was playing against these guys who are building this version of it. And then you could just be totally blindsided by some other bullshit out of the deck.
Yep. Yeah. Like, you're all prepped for one thing, and then all of a sudden they're like, oh yeah, Stoneforge. And you're like, okay, like, here comes a Kaldra at my face.
Yeah.
I will say, I don't think the Stoneforge version is very good, even in the mirror. At first you're like, wow, this seems great. Like, how am I going to beat this? This sucks. And then I had somebody attack with Kaldra. And it was like, I'll just discard this enchantment and make your fucking germ just piss off. Like, bye-bye. But yeah, everybody trying to tech for the deck or for the mirror, like, it almost got in that kind of, like, incestuous, you know, the best thing to do would be to circle back into not giving a shit about everybody trying to do something. My concession for the deck being everywhere and for people possibly playing like pro white stuff was I was playing two Walking Ballista in the main, which was great. It was so good all day. And probably 4 or 5 times I flipped a Walking Ballista off the last room of the Undercity. So it comes in as a 3/3 and then you just like just shoot a few things. Oh man, that's a good feeling.
That's pretty sweet. And they can't even like respond and kill it or anything. You're like, yeah, that's hexproof.
Well, yeah, it's hexproof. Yeah. They can respond.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a spot. I was playing the mirror and my opponent has like 2 of like the 3/1 flyer, the Spellbinder, and like another like X/1 or something. And I was like, oh God, like I'm going to die. Like if I flip like a Solitude, I can only kill one thing. And then he has these 2 things. He's going to kill me. And I was like, what the fuck am I going to do? And it was like,
oh. I love this is like the techno, or this is like the level of thinking you have to do with this stupid deck. Like, oh my God, they've got 3 things and I can only get rid of one of them. What am I going to do?
Yeah.
How does this work?
You just flip the Arc Lightning off the top. It's perfect.
Arc Lightning only hits 2 targets.
Does it? Fuck. What am I? What's the one that hits 3?
What's the is one that hits
3? No, maybe it is Arc Lightning.
No, it's an Arc Lightning anyway, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking of the more recent one of it where it was like 2-1 thing and another.
I can't remember what that's called, but that's still the rules.
Arc Lightning deals 3 damage divided as you choose among any number of targets and or players. Look at that.
A fucking hat. I'm sorry.
I want to say too, like it was a fucking trip playing like I think the bad guy deck for probably the first time ever. Like that was a fucking powerful feeling. Like, you know, you're in any matchup, people are like, oh, like I've read about this, I'm scared. And then some of my favorite things too about playing
like the first and last time you'll ever be in this experience as a mono white player.
Probably true. But like I could feel a lot of like even like the D&T mirror juices flowing, like when I was playing against people, you know, like, look, you both have the same pile of cards, and if you understand one amount of tech better than the next person, like you're going to get them with that. I had one spot I was actually pretty happy with myself. I was playing against the mirror. They had the initiative. There's like, I don't know, some stuff on the board, and like I needed to kill them right now or they were going to like kill me. And they have the guy that gets pro creatures, right? So he's going to attack me. I can't stop him. I have an initiative guy in hand, and I have a Thalia in play and an initiative guy in play. And the one in my hand is the one that gives stuff pro creatures. So it's like logically, like if I play it first, I take the initiative, I attack, I explore with a guy, I hit them, you know, that's the plan. Because you explore, you get deeper, that's cool. But I realized that if I play it post-combat, what I get to do is first strike them with Thalia, take the initiative, forge 2 counters onto my other guy. So then that guy hits them for 5 instead of 3. And then post-combat, play the other initiative guy and trap them. So I get an extra room and I hit them with the extra counters. And this was like the expanding mind palace as you're like putting all the math together.
I think you're like, this seems more like the D&T mirror seems like chess. It seems a little more like checkers. So what'd you do? Okay, well, I hit them.
Oh,
I got some stuff for free.
It's just the value of not being on autopilot.
And then I said, king me.
You know, because the human brain just looks for the most easily accessible dopamine, the most easily accessible pogs. And that says, take the initiative now, play your guy, do the explore. But having that hesitation, putting that pause down, seeing the battlefield, it's great. Anyways, I ended up playing as the mirror 3 times. I didn't lose a match to the mirror, which was great. I did end up with 3 losses overall in the tournament.
So you were 7-3 at the end of the day?
7-3. As my initial reporting after day 1, I invented a round. I think I said I went 7-2, which was there was not 9 rounds the first day. But I ended the first day x2, and then I was doing kind of hot in the morning, but then I ran into Painter, round 10. Red, black, Painter, Chaos Defiler. Oh, that thing's good. And even the Dragon Engine. I was just looking at his deck when I was putting this stuff together. He's only playing one Dragon Engine. I swear to God, I saw multiples. And like, man, welding that thing in and out, you churn through cards.
It's four ways to tutor for it.
You have so many like dials you can turn in that deck right now. Like, it feels so cohesive and so many things you have to try to like put pressure on. And it's so difficult to do that. The most embarrassing thing is I'm pretty sure I was like losing the match anyways, but there was a spot where I walked into a welder trick. Like, you know,
we taught you nothing.
I know. And like, oh, I surveyed the whole thing. I'm looking around. I see. And yeah, you know, there's like a great furnace or something in their graveyard. And I was like, God damn it. I don't even think it was the new one that doesn't really look like an artifact. Like, it was just something I should have seen. But
disgusting.
What I did get to do against Painter, which was fun, was I had a Loran in the sideboard, which is like the white Rexage. And this happened a couple times throughout the day when I was playing as people. But when you're on the play and they play a turn one Urza Saga and then you play a turn two Rexage and just fucking Goblin Settler them, it feels so good.
And the fact that you have the Soul Lands to like ramp it out quick is pretty fucking savage.
Also, I think I drew probably a total of 3 cards off Loran across the 2 days. It was not something I ever wanted to do, but there's spots where you look and you're like, well, I got to draw Solitude, I guess. And you're just like, oh, cool. Here you go.
Here it is. Yeah, because you were telling me about there was one where like it was like end of turn, tap to draw for turn, and then you like tapped it again for the third card and hit the Solitude.
You got a lot of stuff to dig for. You know, I think they had a bit of a, oh, you drew the Solitude, didn't you? And it's like, yeah, but like I got some looks. Like there's 4 in the deck.
Yeah.
You know, we're like 20 cards in and I just draw 3 cards. Like, that's pretty good. And then you also make the equation too, where you're like, look, I get the Solitude and I don't lose, or I don't and I immediately lose. So like, who gives a shit about giving them 3 cards? Anyways, I don't know. Event was great. Tons of fun. Wish I did slightly better. And if it's too much to ask for winning a different match, I wish my opponents did slightly better. So I think there were 6 people that were 7-3 above me in the rankings. And if I was 2 spots higher, I would have hit that minimum cash, baby.
What do you get for like?
You were like the 1.3% off.
Yeah.
0.3% higher match win percentage. You would have been in that sweet.
What'd you get?
Card Titan credit.
Would I get nothing?
No. What would you get?
Oh, I think it was like $200.
Oh, that's actually pretty good.
Like, it's not bad. It was between 100 and 200. It might be 200. It might have been less. But like,
I don't know. Honestly, I thought it was going to be like you got like your money back barely or something.
I mean, it's like between the entry fees for the days. I know you got the credit thing, but it's a toss up under some circumstances anyways.
Yeah.
Well,
that's sweet though. Super excited that you had a really good run.
I was talking to a couple people about this too, and like I try to think of myself, and I try to think I'm being like an even keeled person, you know, like stuff gets exciting, that's fun, but you know, don't let stuff affect like the whims of how you feel too much sometimes. And like, you know, you come out of that first couple rounds and you're like, I'm XO, I'm the best to ever do it. Like, put my name on the fucking trophy. It's done. And like, then you lose a match and you're just like, why did I come here? Oh no. it's ruined. So, you know, a little bit of self-reflection there, but I don't think that came across to any of my opponents at all. Hopefully everything was good vibes. And honestly, like everybody that he played against was like so stoked. And I loved getting the random, like, GP feeling where you see somebody when you're walking to your table and you know somebody like hits your shoulder or whatever, like, hey man, like, how are you doing? And it's like, you know, I met this person earlier in the morning and it's like, oh, I'm winning, and they're like, yeah, keep my breakers good, like, let's go, you know. I love that. Also, melee kind of sucks.
Was it your first time using Melee?
I think it's my first time properly using Melee. If you look at my profile, I apparently signed up for a Lotus Box tournament on Magic Online playing Cyberclaw. Isn't this
the Mercadian Mask
one? That's the Masks one.
So I do remember playing some matches on Magic Online through Arena, which is also really clunky, but it was like okay. I feel like it's 50% towards being a good platform. Event Link fucking sucks ass, so it's not hard to beat like whatever the hell WotC normally does. But
it feels like the foundation is good,
mm-hmm.
but how they present it to you,
yeah,
the UX is not great. Yeah.
They need somebody to just like spend a weekend being like, no, don't put that there. Stop asking people for feedback every time they do everything.
Yeah.
Like checking into your match seems like unnecessary.
Yeah. Nobody ever checked into their match. Like zero.
I checked into mine because it said to check in. I'm like, shit, do I have to do this? So every match, I check into my match. But like, you don't need that because if there's one thing you can count on is that a Magic player with no one in front of him. Well, as soon as the clock hits 10 minutes, yell judge as loud as they fucking can.
Yeah, so it was good shit. How did you guys do? Who wants to jump up to the plate?
I just want to say we mapped this out, and I mapped it out, and I was like, we'll end with Jeff because he did the best. And McBain, you just like... skipped ahead past a segment. And they're like, Jeff, tell us how well you did. Oh, perfect. Why don't we, you know what? Why don't we reverse it? McBain, tell us how you did. let's decrescendo. You can tune out now if you only want to hear about the winning match magicians.
Well, if you want to hear about the most drawingest magicians, spoiler, it wasn't me. Apparently there was someone who picked up 4 draws in the
day. My god,
what?
How is that possible?
I'm not sure, but I assume it has something to do with not playing very quick and playing a blue deck that you maybe, or like a really really dirtily white deck that you maybe shouldn't be playing. And but yeah, I ended up playing lands, which I had kind of like settled on a while ago. I really, really wanted to play the non Urza Saga version of lands that just has like one Urza Saga as a side plan that is commonly played in Japan. I was doing pretty well with it on Magic Online. It plays 3 Valakut Exploration, and it just is like this really powerful engine that you can get going. There was even some like mono white initiative decks that I played online where they got the initiative and they were going off, and I was like, herp derp, Valakut Exploration, exploration, draw a ton of cards, you just die. Like, you just can't keep up with me. So it was fun, but at the same time, it plays like Endurances in the sideboard. And you're basically the good version of lands, or the saga version of lands, is like pre-boarded against the metagame. Whereas the Japanese version is like not. You're not pre-boarded against anyone, and you have this like really slow, dirtily plan, and then you board in all the stuff that the other version of lands just plays main deck. So I just, as much as I wanted to do it, I couldn't bring myself to play it. So I just played a kind of hodgepodge of like 3 or 4 of like the main lands grandmasters. And by the end of round 6, I was 4-1-1, which I felt was like pretty good.
That's not bad.
Yeah, like for playing a deck that you're like crossing your fingers, you don't just get paired into like initiative decks, because it's just like it is really bad for you, that matchup. I ended up getting paired into it round 2, and we drew the first game. I basically got like infinite Maze of Ifs in play, and then just locked them out of the game. I think they completed the dungeon like 4 or 5 times over the course of the match. And it almost came down to them decking. And at the end, when we went to time, I had like a Punishing Fire loop going, and they were having to solitude their own creatures so that they wouldn't die. And then they're like, okay, that's time. And I was like, do you concede? And they're like, no. I'm like,
okay, is this the judge call one?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And we did have an interesting interaction where, like, at one point in the game, they had played a Chromebox with like something imprinted on it. And then they're like, oh no, I don't want to put that on there. And I was just like, hell no, like you played that, like whatever. And I no-sir'd them. And they're like, oh, okay, sure. And like, we played on. And then several turns later, or a while later, I don't know, we only played one game. We were like in an attack where I was trying to get the initiative back with the Merit Lage. And we kind of did like three things at once where we were trying to like resolve damage on blocks. They were solituding. And there was like three things going on. I was like, oh, hold on here. I want to like Mazavith my creature back that they had blocked with to save the creature after damage.
After you like before, graveyard.
I put the Merit Lage or something. Yeah, you. I had done something. I was in the middle of resolving like three things. It
moved towards the graveyard region of the playboard,
and I just call a judge. And I was like, "Hold on, like nothing's happened. I'm still in the middle of resolving all these things. I would like to do this." And we kind of walked through it, and the judge is like, "Yeah, that's fine." And then the look on my opponent's face when they're like, "What? You just no-served me on this, and like now you're doing this?"
And oh, like that was like, I was watching and I was like, yeah, you know, it's a mistake. You call the judge yourself. The judge is like, yeah, it's fine. I'm like, oh yeah, no big deal. And then your opponent goes, wait, I played a Chromebox and I imprinted a wrong card by accident. And he said no. And the judge is like, well, you can call a judge. I would have wound it back too. And he just had this look on his face. And I was just like, McBain, you fucking dirtbag.
Honestly, it was like, so sure, I'm not going to argue that, but it was like instinctive. I don't know, maybe it's just like playing Magic for 25 years and like competitive events where it's like someone goes to take something back and you're like, whoa, no, get the fuck out of here. Like,
it's true. I mean, an event like that for sure. And like, I don't think you're logically being like, well, I'm going to call a judge because they'll do it for me. You should have called the judge.
I just like, I would have also no-served them. And then after, I would have looked at me and like, shit. And then in my head, I would have been like, I can call a judge. I'm like, fuck, I can't. It's too embarrassing. And then I would have just put my endurance to the graveyard and been like, fuck, I'm going to lose now.
Yeah, I didn't do that. And we ended up drawing. And I actually went and found them later in the weekend. I was just like, hey, you know, that was kind of shitty. And they said, yeah, don't worry about it. They were like a pioneer player who borrowed the deck and wouldn't. Did the draw bracket, slaughtered a whole bunch of people. They ended up on camera at one point, and then ultimately picked up, I think, three losses towards the end of day one. But yeah, so I got into the draw bracket early and then kind of like fought back through a couple fun games. Round six, I beat, I played Brian Koval, who's on the Hot Bant or whatever that deck is called. And played hot some really band? Interesting hot band. I don't know. The
band with red.
Band with red.
It's got a little some bolts, you know, some fire. I don't know if it has bolts band. Specifically, but you know.
It's got, I think it's just
Jeff
like fire
blast. Jeff doesn't like it. What do you think about dark band, Jeff?
Dark band's okay. Hot band just makes you think about hot pants.
I don't know. It was hot band, but they were fun games. But he played really quick. Like it was, you know, lands versus a control deck. And we were probably done in like 25 minutes, two games. Like it was pretty quick to the point where like I almost missed a couple of key plays. And, but then we had round 7 and 8 where I went draw against a D&T opponent and then another four color. Opponent, which was really frustrating, but it was one of those situations where you're just kind of like, okay, well, here's like the D&T one kind of drew out, and game two just went on forever, and I could never really kill them, but they could never really do anything, and then eventually they just drew really well for several turns in a row, and I didn't, and then we went to game three with like 0 seconds remaining and it was an immediate draw. And then round 8, it was one of those, again, situations where you kind of present an overwhelming, like, I'm going to win this game position at the end of time. And you're like, do you concede? Like, and they just said, nope, I don't want to concede. And then, like, didn't show up the next day. I was just like, cool. well played, sir. Thank you so much for
That's a power move.
Yeah. I guess, like, maybe they were just, like, really frustrated or something with me. I don't know. But it's pretty dickish, if you ask me.
Or you just beat them. I don't know. I, like, whenever people are like, would you concede? I'm like, fuck no. Like, if it's you and you're like, I'm going to scoop you to top eight or something, like, for sure. But, like, would you concede? Like, no.
I think the X3 racket has a real shot.
Beat me in the game of Magic. It's really easy. It's not hard to beat me, but sorry you couldn't do it.
For me, it's frustrating at the end of, like, a long, long day. And I'm playing as fast as I can. And, like, they're sitting there looking at their ponders for 5 minutes. Like, there were several situations where, like, Svans is just, like, it was evident with, same with my D&T opponent and a few others, where, like, they just had played against land, like, twice in their life. Mm-hmm. So you're presenting these really weird game states that they're just, like, having to kind of figure out on the fly and really tanking to do it. And then you're kind of just like, okay, let's go. Let's go. You have to make a move. Come on, please. Let's continue playing. And then you end in a draw. So it was frustrating. But, like, that's when you're playing a deck that can be more controlling, that's just kind of the price you pay. So it was frustrating.
It's hard, like, calling a judge on slow play, because, like, you don't want to be like,
well, they don't call it.
Well,
I have, like, a lot of, like, respect for judges because they don't get paid enough and, like, they have to deal with Magic players being idiots all the time, but, like, they don't call slow play properly. And so maybe it's not, like, it's not an individual judge's fault, but, like, they just don't call slow play. You could be like, please watch my opponent for slow play, and they'll stand there and be like, well, you got to go a little faster, and be like, well, if that's happening, they're breaking the rules.
Apparently, yeah. So we were talking with Greg and a few others about this, and apparently the play is that you stand up, leave the table, and be like, I have to ask a judge a question about some card. And then you tell them at that point, you're like, can you watch this game for slow play? They're playing like a freaking donkey. And then sit back down. And then the judge will watch. And that way the player isn't prompted or anything like that. And they continue to do what they're always doing.
But I think, like, if I say it out loud and then my opponent plays faster, that's fine too. You know, like.
Yeah.
They, well, trying to get so, them, like, trying I'm not to trying to get something. Them on a GRV. I just want them to, like, play fast.
So the information or the recommendation had come from a judge to say that, to say, like, this is what you should do. And it's not necessarily that they will get a GRV or whatever. It's more that, like, at the end of it, the judge will be like, you guys get 5 extra minutes of time or something as a way to kind of compensate for something. But I don't know. It's challenging and frustrating. And it ultimately it goes back to the fact, like, it was one of the reasons why, like, I always stayed away from D&T back in the day before Kaldra, because it's just like, I was like, I will never take this to a tournament because some of the games will just go on forever. And if you make one small mistake, it's like, okay, I need to take another, like, 15 turns to build back up to the point where I might be able to kill them again.
There is, like, nothing more frustrating than sitting there watching your opponent resolve a ponder and you're like, I have my next turn locked in. This will take me 10 seconds. You know, they ponder, and then finally do it. And you're like, okay, like, draw, land, you know, vial, pass. Like, it's like, let's go. Come on. Hope you thought about the cantrip about next.
There were several times where I would prompt my opponent where I would just say, is it my turn? Like, they'd be sitting there thinking, like, literally not doing anything, just thinking. And I would just look at them. I'm like, can I go? Is it my turn? And they're like, well, no, I'm going to make a play. I'm like, well, then make a fucking play. Like, you've literally been 20 seconds just sitting there looking at nothing. And I'm like, when I'm the person saying this and I'm, like, renowned for slow play, and I'm like,
Jeff is dying right now.
This I just so love good. His, like, how much he's advocating on calling on slow play, and he ended up XX3.
It was so painful.
Like, I mean, maybe you just got really unlucky, but also, like, how many people have three draws?
I actually looked. And
one guy had four, apparently.
Yeah, and there's one guy with four, which is just insane. But I got like full circle where like you're out of the draw bracket again once you get the third draw.
Right. Like, oh, so you just
lost. Now it's like a win. Now it's just like basically a win. So
lowest win.
But last round I played Jarvis.
This win took me three rounds.
Last round I played Jarvis on Delver. I did have one fun play against him. I think I mulled to like six and then five against him. We went to three games, but in game one, I mulled. I knew he was on Delver. He knew I was on Lens, apparently. And I mulled to six. And I had this hand where it was like double mocks and an exploration and a loam and some other stuff. It was a decent hand. And I went to put the loam or the exploration or a mox demon on the bottom. So I had a mox and an exploration in my hand. I was like, he's going to force something. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to put the exploration on the bottom and keep the mox. So one, I can go like double mox, loam, and just get going. But also if he counters the mox, I have another mox. And I was just like, turn one, I'm like, okay, mox diamond. He's like, snap forces, like no hesitation. And then I'm like, oh, okay, cool. I record life totals. And then I just play the second mox. I was like, mox diamond. And he's just like under his breath. He's like, savage. I was like, yeah, here you go. But ultimately, after I lost to him in the third game was kind of a non-game. It was just pretty brutal. He had two Brazen Borrowers main deck, which was not ideal. So he would do these like tempo-y things where he'd like Brazen Borrower or a Mox Diamond on me. I'm like, could you not? Could you go?
I love that.
It was really rude because he's just like, oh, I've got another one in there. I can like, if I need to, I'll go find it. But after that, I just dropped from the event because I picked up my third loss and went over and played some more old school for the day. But all in all, it was super fun. I really liked the whole 2-day event rather than just a really long day one.
It's such a trip too, where they're like, there's no cut. Everybody can play day two. Like, you know.
Yeah, that's kind of weird.
Like, I think they did that at some GPs before they stopped doing GPs. But like, you know, if you just want to play Magic, like, sure. But you know, the worst part is that you're like 50-50 for your opponent showing up if you're on the lower half.
Yeah, especially when they take a draw in the last round of day one and then don't show up for day two. Anyway, Quinn, how was your day two?
Oh, my day two was excellent. I can get into that a little later, but we'll only start with day one. Well, we start with a precursor to the tournament where I brought two decks, Painter and Infect, because I kind of know what I'm doing with Infect, and Painter seemed good. That'd be one of my few beefs with the tournament, and like a minor quibble, I guess, because I thought Card Kingdom ran a great event, and everyone on their team that I had the pleasure of dealing with was extremely welcoming and kind. But all of the events before the main event started were qualifiers for this actually really cool cube event that I don't know, we can get into if we have time, which we probably won't. But there was single elimination. And I just wanted to like play Legacy and be like, is this good? So I jammed two events. And like, I'm just going to jam. This. I'm going to jam like one with each deck. And so I'm like, cool, I'll just play Infect. See how it goes, get you know, kind of like get the juices flowing, see how I feel. When my opponent mulls, they mull again, and I'm like, oh, you know, pretty friendly guy. And I'm like, oh man, sorry, like, you know, but guess get him out of the way now, you know, for tomorrow. He's like, oh no, this deck mulls pretty well, you know. He's kind of like, it's kind of like you get what you get. And I'm like, oh shit, I think I know what's gonna happen here. And he goes Marsh Flats, and I'm like, I know what's happening. Get a swamp and play Dark Ritual, I dare you. And he was like, whoa, what? And he goes, well, first, I'm going to play Grief Pitching Thing. I'm like, oh, yeah, there it is. And I'm like, I got to force of will. And he was like, I'll take the force. And I'm like, show me Dark Ritual. So I got reanimated. And I'm like, okay, it's all good. I like I've reanimated many people. He was like, sorry. I'm like, never apologize for making Drizzle Brand friend. Like, I'm not upset about this at all. I also, before the tournament, I was like looking at my sideboard and I'm like, man, Sam Dams is only playing one surgical extraction. And I'm like, should I have two? I'm like, no, I think I want an extra prismatic ending because like there's way more chance of me like, you know, seeing Stompy or just like prismatic getting super flexible. And like, how much reanimators are going to be doesn't seem super great right now. So I had one, a single surgical extraction as graveyard hate in my sideboard.
That's your only piece of graveyard hate is a single surgical?
Well, I have like counter spells.
Noted graveyard hate.
I mean, they stop the thing from happening, right?
There is a reason why. Yeah.
I had 12 counter spells. But I mean, that was a choice, right? I'm like, I want to jam Torpor Orb in the side. I want to deal with this stuff. So I'm like, okay, I need to like cut something. I'll just cut Surgical Extraction. I'm like, whatever. Maybe I'll play against Reanimator. Maybe I won't. I haven't played against Reanimator. Shit happens.
I mean, it's true. I didn't play against Reanimator all day. I had some ley lines that never came in.
I think it was like the right like meta call. But, you know, whatever. You play one match and you lose and that's it. So I'm like, okay, well, I'll play Painter. Maybe I'll like, you know, win a match or two, see how it goes. And I get paired up sitting against, I don't know, I didn't know what my opponent was playing because like, oh, we made a mistake. We're going to repair. And I'm like, oh, and I look and I'm like, oh, that's weird. Just like reverted back to my like last event. And then I look again. And I'm like, oh, no. Oh, no, this is the new event. And I sit down and the guy's like, oh, dude, I'm sorry. I'm like, hey, what are we talking about? Don't apologize for making Grizzle Brand. I'm like, I want you to know that this time I have three surgical extractions. I did not find the surgical extractions, though. And he got me again. Which is like hilarious, but I think this would be my beef against like the single limb thing. I just wanted to like play Magic, and if I lost, I did not care. I like just wanted to get reps in and try and figure out what I was going to play. Did not get a lot of reps in, and so I was just like, well, I think I just play Infect because I know what I'm doing, and like, you know, Painter's pre-meta gamed, like Painter's probably better. I'm like, well, you know, what if I play like Initiative, which I think Painter's actually pretty good against. At the time, I'm like, I think Infect's pretty good against Initiative, which I still think. But I'm like, well, if I play like Delver, like Painter's definitely better, but like, we'll see what happens. Like, you know, you never know what's going to happen. So I played Infect and I sit down in my very first round and my opponent plays Scalding Tarn and I'm like, oh, fuck. And then they play Delver Secrets. So I'm like, ah, yeah, there it is. So I got Delvered. I got like put myself in a position to win. Not to say that I got unlucky, but you just kind of, you know, sometimes the game breaks away, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes you get to turn two people with that deck, so you're not, I don't complain when things, you know, I need to draw like one pump spell in both games, I think. And I think I could have beat their hand, but shit happens. I play against four color control, where Ajani was the truth. Except I ultimated the Ajani and my opponent had six poison counters. Just so everyone knows, when you ultimate Ajani, you get an emblem that says whenever you cast a creature or planeswalker spell, your opponent gets two poison counters. So I just needed to find two spells. It didn't matter if my opponent countered them. I have this interactable with emblem, and I got my Ajani to seven and the ultimate six. So the Ajani's on one, and I just couldn't find any creature spells. I was like, what are you holding? as they beat me down with Snapcasters, it was fucking, it's like, it was funny as hell though. And my opponent again, super cool dude. And then in game two they just kind of like got me, which is like kind of happens. And so I'm in the loser's bracket and I'm like, you know what, I'm in 0-2, like, you know, I'm gonna play against something wild, this will be great, I'm gonna fucking get, like, you know, I'll knock off one win and then, you know, I'll keep playing until I lose. And then I'll get out of here. I play at least a Dire Roll, and my opponent plays Underground Sea and goes Dark Ritual. And I'm like, oh, fuck, are you kidding me? Like, in my head, I didn't say that to them. And I'm like, uh-huh. And I kept a hand that was like a turn two kill, but I didn't have any counter magic. I had like Vines for Protection and like Invigor Berserk and a Glistener Elf. And I'm like, oh, maybe, like, you know, maybe you get there, maybe you don't. I kind of like have to keep that hand. Mm-hmm. And they go Dark Ritual. And I'm like, oh, fuck, is it going to be? I'm like, no, it's off at Underground. Oh, no. Doomsday. And they're just gonna like pedal and like kill me. I'm like, I just look at the kid and I'm like, come on, man, we're in the 0-2 bracket. This isn't supposed to be happening. And he's laughing. He's like, you haven't seen me playing all day. He also apologized. He's like, I might be a little slow making the pile. I'm sorry. And then just like whipped through his cards. And I was like, well, show me. Another very, very good time. But game two, I had the days for personal tutor, which I think they were just using to get duress or Thoughtseize, because they had the Doomsday in hand. So when I dazed the personal tutor, they just went Dark Ritual Doomsday. And I was like, oh, okay. So I died in turn two.
Jeez.
And then, but there was this brewery that I wanted to go to that's only open from 12 to 4 on most Saturdays, and it was open. And a friend of the show, Rob Cross, won an extra one round. But then also was in the X3 bracket and was like, hey, are you still going to that brewery? I'm like, oh yeah, buddy, let's do it. So that was my
turn. I want to mention another thing about Rob as well, about the single elimination. So I mean, Rob was good enough to win and qualify for that cube event, but I think it was his last round. And the thing about single elimination is if you get to time, it goes to sudden death.
Yeah.
Which is like what the first change life total lose. Like,
it's just, I think whoever has the most life,
No, because there's a thing. And then it's as soon as somebody's life total changes, it's not a countdown. It's like, time is now, and as soon as your life, if your life goes down or my life goes up, I win.
That's only if it's tied, I think. After turns, like, who had the most life?
So Rob,
he did win that way too.
Rob, they just finished their last game, or their second game. Time is called. They're 1-1 going into game three, knowing they're immediately sudden death. Rob's on the play. I don't remember what he's playing against, and he's playing Death and Taxes. And he's just like, this is the biggest brainwave ever. He's like, if I keep a hand that's land, Mother of Runes, Solitude, white card, I can win the game on turn one. And he just mauls, land, Solitude, land, Mother, Solitude, my mom, I win the game. Qualified. Done. They said DNT couldn't pull off a turn one win.
Hello. It's like the Moneyball approach to Magic here.
Not that I put myself in any position to get there, but we were talking about that after, and I, like, when Rob and I were at the brewery, and I'm like, I can't imagine opening a hand that's like Glistening Elf, Invigorate, Berserk, and then going, oh, I lose.
Yeah, because you know the best part is,
so mad.
If they have a force for any part of that, they have to pay a life. They fucking lose. It's foolproof. Oh, it's so good.
Quinn, aren't mono white players the worst? They're either like killing you with initiative or like swords it's in just, their bum to kill you.
Like they need to make a small adjustment on that. Like you needed to like gain life. Maybe it should just be you need to damage your opponent.
I think, and under any circumstance, sudden death is fucking stupid.
Someone's got to win. I think like they're put in a position, but like it's like, you know, you should be like, you have to like bolt your opponent or something, you know.
Hey, turn one mom will probably still get there.
Yeah, that's fine too, right? Turn one mom, great.
Yeah, but then but this it would is just like no, but it, I like the fact that it's
the
like,
fact that you can't force a will, like
yeah,
or like else... if I cast Invigorate, I lose.
Yeah, yeah. Rob that's was talking about like, deck. They can't force it. I was like, what do you mean? And he's like, they pay the life. They pay the life. Like that man, he saw through the matrix. He knew what was going on.
Yeah. He also couldn't talk at the end of it. He was so exhausted. So he had a shitty event, Quinn. Although
I had a good time. My opponent's role was wonderful.
Was pretty high.
Yeah.
I do like after you got knocked out by like the double reanimator and we were just playing pickup games afterwards. We kept playing and I kept like just like mizing or like scumming you somehow in all of our pickup games or a lot of them. And I was like, I think Quinn's just going to quit Magic right here and now. Like you were so distraught.
It's just like, you know, like sometimes you play and it goes well. Sometimes it doesn't. Kind of is what it is. Maybe if I was better, I would be like, no, it doesn't do that. But I don't know. I was like.
I know what you mean.
Sometimes you pick up hands of cards and you're like, actually, when we were playing, which is actually not about being good at Magic, there were just so many times where I was like, oh, I have no lands. Oh, I have no lands. Fuck, I'd be going to five here if this is a really game. And I would, in fact, I was playing an extra land. I usually play 18. It's my preference. But I was just playing like the current list that everyone's talking about on the Discord. I was playing 19 lands and I'm like, I just can't find a colored source. I have so many fetchable lands.
That's hard. Yeah, when you just hit that like bad side of variance, like just truthfully and honestly bad side of variance, it's a really shitty feeling.
It was fine though, because we weren't in, I was gonna name a city I didn't like, maybe I'll decline. We're in a good place. And so I was just kind of like, all right, I'm out, bye.
Yeah.
So to answer your question, on Sunday, I went to one of the most celebrated taco restaurants in North America. America.
You can amp it up.
Mexico. Well, I don't want to count Mexico in that. So in the United States.
Yeah, that looks crazy. I appreciate that, you know, you had a plan for scrubbing out. It was like, there's this brewery that's only open now. There's this taco place that's only open then. Like, that's it.
Yeah, if I went like 0-2 drop right off the hop, I would have to like take like 2 hours to like recalibrate and think of like what I was going to do if I wasn't just going to like play some old school or something. But you had like a whole strategy, Barrett. Your scrub out technology was pretty next level.
My only like misplay was on Sunday. I came back and played a three rounder for Legacy instead of just going to Museum. Although I did win a match finally in that two matches.
Nice. Overall, we had several big events. Like there was the big Four Seasons one in Europe. There was Eternal Weekend in Asia. There was the Eternal Weekend North America.
The EW Online.
EW Online, like, well, the Eternal Weekend in Europe, that was also online. I guess, yeah, that one was online.
Mm-hmm.
It was supposed to be the Europe one, but it was online. And maybe I'm forgetting another one. There was several really big events. And then interspersed within that, there was like a showcase challenge.
Big ones were Eternal Weekend Asia, Eternal Weekend North America.
There's the MTGO, European Legacy.
MTGO Eternal Weekend, Four Seasons, European Legacy Masters.
Yeah, in Bologna.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Four Seasons one. And it was interesting to see like the... And then like on top of all of that was this kind of like ominous white initiative or red initiative, just initiative mechanic in general, that was kind of like influencing and changing the metagame. And it's been, I guess, interesting to see it evolve and change. One kind of thing that stood out to me as I went and I looked at one of the recent showcase challenges that kind of happened on the tail end of all of this. And so it's a much more concentrated metagame of like less players, but like everyone's kind of like gunning for one another. And it kind of shows like it's slightly inbred, but it was also an interesting result where you had 14% of the metagame was white stompy, which is like actually pretty high. Like typically in the bigger events, it was only like 8-10%. So you had almost like double the amount of people playing white stompy, but the win rate was sub 45%, which was pretty shocking compared to in the larger events. It seemed to be cleaning up pretty well, like 65% kind of win rate in some of them, over like between 55% and 65%. So it was interesting, like when people, I guess, are more prepared for it, it does substantially worse. So it suggests that there could be some kind of evolution, or maybe it's not as good, but I also think that's probably just a trap and it's actually just extremely, extremely good. I don't know. I'm just curious, Jeff, on your thoughts on like how you've been on the inside. You've been the villain in all of this. Like, do you feel that Legacy has the tools to continue to evolve, or do you feel that we're kind of in this garbage time format right now?
I mean, it's not like a breach situation where it's so, so fucked up, but like the initiative and the Undercity like shouldn't exist. It's really fucking stupid.
I think Delver has game. I don't think anyone really knew what they were doing. So the timing of the event, with such, but if you look at like recent stuff, like it's Delver again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like that's the thing.
Initiative Stompy pushed out a bunch of tier two decks. Like yeah. It just made Delver better. Like Delver can just be like, I'm not gonna have to worry about playing some like fucking deck that I'm not prepared for. I'm Delver, and there's like six decks in Legacy now. Which yeah. I think is like the bigger issue. It's not that Initiative Stompy is too strong. Instead, it just like you might, you know, run into someone just being like, I want to play this because I want to play it. But if you're like online, Initiative Stompy like pushed out all like the fucking fringe decks, and now it's like Delver, Initiative Stompy, Painter, you know. I mean, Breakfast is kind of back, I guess. Like elves. Like, so that's the thing. It's Delver. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, those Marvel movies where you're like, oh, there's a second bad guy. You're like, oh no, it was the real bad guy all along. Like, mm-hmm. you know, Initiative Stompy's the minor villain.
Yeah, really, at the end of the day, Blue Red Delver was the one like introducing the initiative mechanic. They're like, mm-hmm. hey, you should put this in the commander thing. And it's like it's like big Delver, and they're like distracting us with like the fake news climate change so that they can just continue to pollute.
The next evolution is the Machiavellian Delver.
It's frustrating in that like some of the, I think like Doomsday and lands in particular have been hit pretty hard, in that a lot of those decks that like Doomsday kind of preyed on or lands preyed on in a way all disappeared or became a lot more rare. And you're left with just like an even more likely chance that you're going to run into a really bad matchup. Or the things that you were also not that great against all of a sudden become more popular. So if like from my perspective from lands, you have these decks who are trying to go underneath initiative or race initiative. So all of a sudden you have these like turn one, turn two decks coming back into the format to a higher degree. And it's just like, I don't want to play that as lands. Or Doomsday is like, well, I want to not have to be Turbo Wii, for example.
Mm.
And
I don't think Initiative Stompy is too strong, but like to your point about like what it pushes out and then also like incentivizing like faster combo, like it just makes the format worse.
Yeah. And like it's whether or not it's like too strong, like I don't think anybody can argue that the mechanic is good and yeah, like creates
I think that's interesting, like the things. Inherent issue with Legacy over the last couple of years
mm-hmm.
is that like, I mean, they should probably do something about Delver.
Yeah.
They haven't, whatever. It's kind of is what it is. But everything else is coming in, especially with the fact that they haven't done anything with Delver. Like, they're not going to ban White Plume Adventure before they ban Murktide Regent. Like, that'd be a fucking joke.
Watch them.
Like, maybe that'll happen, but that would be just like laughable, in my opinion. But it's all these things where you're like, oh, like, should this exist? Like, no. You know, like, oh, does this make the game more fun? Like, no. You know, is Veil of Summer too powerful? No. Like, does it fucking suck? Like, yes. Teferi Time Raffler, Narset Parter of Veils.
Yeah, it is just like the trajectory everything has gone, right? Culminating in the latest version of it.
Although, to end on a good note, I do want to say that in all of these events that we just kind of like went over, one thing that has been showing up in small numbers but being very successful is none other than the Rug Delver or the pseudo Canadian Threshold deck.
Thank you for having yourself really, there.
Other than JPA, who has been playing Nimble Mongoose, just because he's like, you know, feeling nostalgic and wanted to have like some dopamine hits when you kill someone with a Nimble Mongoose. There have been people in all of these events playing a kind of like greenized version of the blue red Delver deck, and like the notable cards are in the main deck. You're playing four Stifles and four Tarmogoyf, and then in the sideboard you're playing two Minsk and Booze. Those are like the really big changes between the decks, between just a blue red Delver approach. And apparently, like, it does beat up pretty well on an initiative. And then you also get to dodge and not have to play the pyroblast game where all of your good threats just get owned by a pyroblast and you get to play some Tarmogoyfs. So I don't know. Right. I think it's cool.
Can I just give you some insight into JPA playing Nimble Mongoose? Someone, don't tell me Nimble Mongoose is playable. JPA, it's not, but casting it lets your mind regress to Legacy glory days.
Yeah, that's what he said. It wanted to be nostalgic and feel things.
And then when he lost his top 8 streak, Rug top 8 streak died. On to find another deck that can make this format bearable.
Yeah, he's in a dark place right now. So I had said that there's like the JPA doing his own thing, but then these other players are playing just Tarmogoyf and Stifle in the deck. And I think I even saw Rich Cali, who finished 33rd, one above you, Jeff, in the big event. So you guys are both on the outside looking in.
He has more complaint equity for sure.
For sure. But I think he had fired it up recently the other day, and I think his main comment was Stifle's amazing and also awful. It's good when it's good and nothing else can touch it. And then when it's bad, it just rots in your hand. It's awful.
Man,
I've gotten Stifle a lot playing initiative stuff lately, and it feels real bad.
When you're playing White Plumes and you're just like Stifle, it's like, oh God.
Yeah. And then you just like follow up with a wasteland on them and then daze their next spell. And they're like, wow, this looks really bad. So I think this is going to be what I'm going to be playing for the next while. One, to just play Delver, but not just play like the cookie cutter best Delver. I've got those Future Sight Tarmogoyfs that I want to bust out. So, and I got to play Stifle. So we're going to do that.
True Name's also very good against the deck.
Yeah, I think we're True Name isn't showing up in these lists is just because like in those Delver Mirror matches or those four color matches.
Yeah. Pyroblast.
Your real value is the fact that you can run out your Minsk or your Tarmogoyf and just walk past their red blast that they have. Cause everyone's boarding in like four red blasts, right? Or more. And then you just get to like play a big beater.
I don't want to beat anyone over the head with my religion, but St. Catherine exists in paper. No one can see me, but I'm putting my hands together right now.
There's a universe out there where Quinn played the St. Catherine, like Jeskai Delver deck and like top eight at Eternal Weekend.
It's a universe beyond.
True.
I can tell that wasn't good because I only got a like, that was a real like charitable chuckle that Jeff just gave. Sorry, not my best work. I apologize.
Courtesy chuckle.
Well, why don't we save your best work for the next episode and move to That's Gas and round things out. I think we have a bunch to say here, so we might as well jump into it. And we'll go in the order that we actually have written down, so I'll just not screw this up.
I don't know if that is the most important order. Like, we can discuss this off the air.
That's well, the Jeff, one.
Why don't you go, Jeff?
Oh, okay. Okay. So inside out. Okay. Perfect. Okay. Really, I had a lot of things written down here, and the truth of it comes down to just everybody that I met and talked to over the weekend. You know, I was lucky enough to meet a few people because of the podcast who, you know, wanted to talk and hang out, which is great. And then just, you know, all of my opponents were like great people to chat with, both on a side event I did and, you know, playing the actual main event. It's super fun to talk to everybody about where they come from. That's a fucking strange sentence. Where they came from to get to the tournament. And, you know, you say Vancouver, and for once, they're not like, oh, Vancouver, Washington. And they're all like, holy fuck. So, I mean, Jim, Dom, the guys at Meeple People who were playing in the last event of the weekend. I think it was basically the whole Meeple People squad and then me and one other person doing a UMA draft. Pat, Jarvis, Elliot, obviously, Greg, Adam, and another big thanks to Jason Murray, John Ryan, XJ Cloud, Eddie, all for prepping all of the Dungeons Zombie work that I cribbed and stole all of.
Savage excluding Rob there.
Oh, and I mean, you know what? That's a good catch. I need to shout out Rob because I didn't get a chance to hang out with Rob when we were in Toronto because his wife and kid got sick and the stuff just didn't line up. So getting to spend like 2 days with, you know, a guy I really like and love hanging out with is awesome. So that was a lot of fun. There was a couple times we're at the bottle shop and we're all hanging out and you guys are doing your own chats and just Rob and I in the corner talking about shitty white cards. It was a great time.
Yeah, I really enjoyed hanging out with Rob. And then also Thor, who came along as well at one point, Rob's friend.
I'm jealous you met Dom. I was kind of like keeping half an eye out for him.
Did you not get to meet him?
No, I was like, I didn't.
I guess you
like,
fucking left.
I was on site and I just left, right? So, but I, when I was on site, like I knew he was going to be there. So I was kind of looking out for him, but I just didn't like run into him.
Hopefully he was wearing a jersey that had his Twitter handle on it. So it made it very easy.
I saw him on what I guess it was like Friday. He was playing like the single limb games. And I saw that he was on Dungeon Stompy. And I said to myself, I'm like, I need to go get Dom and just be like, hey, you know who I am. Let's play some games. Because I just like, you hadn't showed up yet, Jeff. And then you would also like, we never
got like accusatory.
Well, I was trying to like train against Dungeon Stompy and we never made our Magic Online games work. So I just like didn't have the reps I wanted. So I was like looking around for someone to just like,
someone please.
Yeah, like almost like a Fight Club thing where I was just like, just beat me up. Like, I just need to, I just need this. For me, like, so again, I think echo everything you said. And definitely, again, Rob was really fun. Elliot was great to have along. I'll kind of go a different angle on this. And I did play a bunch of old school for the weekend. So I had both my lands deck. And then I also brought an old school deck. And Rob and I and Elliot went to the Thursday old school event offsite, the Eternal Weekend event that was kind of run by Dice City Games. Super fun. It was at a pub kind of up north towards Fishtown from the convention center in a, like a slightly sketchy, like wrong side of the tracks part of town, which was kind of fun. It was about 50 people, I think. Maybe just a bit more, which was like a really good size for just like a pub that you had rented out. And super fun old school games. There was one guy who was just like literally off the wall in terms of like how eccentric they were. One of the most interesting things. So they had like a mono green unsleeved deck as their deck of cards. And then they had a Sheoldred in there that like no one cared about. They're like, okay, sure, play a Sheoldred. And then they had a Dark Ritual and a Swamp in their deck. And they like, they had this dream of like, you know, I'm going to get all three and I'm going to play Sheoldred. And like in old school, it was like such a shitty casual deck that everyone's like, yeah, you're just going to lose all your games. So like, it doesn't matter. But like, they were just like this really kind of off the wall person. And they had a Chaos Orb in their deck, like an unlimited Chaos Orb. And when they would play it, they're just like, okay, so like when I play my Chaos Orb, I lean back on the table and they hold it like, and they bend the Chaos Orb back in their hand and then like, let it go and they flick it onto the table. And they're just like, yeah, so like, this is how I flip my Chaos Orb, just so you know. And like, whatever it lands on dies. If it lands on my own stuff, I just kill it. Like that's how I'm going to play it. And you're like,
fuck yeah.
Sure, bud. Like whatever. And it was like, you're sitting there like playing power and just like crushing them. And they're like playing all these random one-ups that are just like HP to damaged. And they were in like 10 beers deep at this point. It was just like this really weird experience that you had. But all in all, the old school was super fun. I had a lot of fun there. And then they also had like events going throughout the whole weekend. So there was people who showed up from like 3 or 4 hour distances away. They would just show up. They played some of them played the old school event, the offsite event, or they just played old school all day long. And there was like 10 to 15 people who would just play these like best of three or these three match sets. And then they would fire it up again. And then they would get prize tickets and like, what do I even do with these? Because they're just like old school players who don't care. But it was really fun. I enjoyed it. So that was like a really nice balance to the whole event, is that like you could be this like hyper competitive legacy thing and having the fun there, dealing with all sorts of wacky mechanics and everything, and then go to like the total other end of the spectrum and be like, I'm going to flip my Chaos Orb. And I had a lot of fun with that. Quinn, you want to close us out?
I would like to shout out the many fine places that I ate and imbibed. Wait, is that also imbibing also eating?
I think it's just drinking, isn't it?
Okay, then I ate and imbibed in Philadelphia. Fermentory Farm, Kensington Quarters, Middle Child Clubhouse, Bottle Bar East, Monk's Cafe, South Philly Barbacoa, and Joe's Steak and Soda Shop, where I had a local delicacy they called a Philly cheesesteak, which was delightful.
I'm really jealous of all the food you had to eat. I miss
what happens when you're not winning a Magic. You just eat a lot of food. Also, I didn't play old school. That's when I went to one of the restaurants too.
Did you get any good sodas at the steak and soda?
I had a cherry Coke. Where they mix in like the cherry like into the action, into the Sprite and Coke. Yeah. It's delightful.
Ellie and I went to a deli and they had egg creams. I was very close to ordering an egg cream. I didn't, because it was like
milkshake.
It was like 11 o'clock in the morning. I wasn't going to have an egg cream, but
I mean, that balanced breakfast. anything else before we call it an evening? No? All right. Well, if you made it this far, thanks for listening. Thank you again to Card Kingdom in the city of Philadelphia. And we will see you all.
Card Titan.
Card Titan.
Card Titan.
How could you forget our forgetful?
It's my West Coast bias.
Procrastinating overlords.
Anyways, we'll see you all two thresholds.
Card Titan.